News Talk 1400 KFRU is proud to present the KFRU Heritage Series. It's a one-hour perspective on the events and the people whose lives have contributed to the heritage of Boone County. Listen each Sunday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. The KFRU Heritage Series. From News Talk 1400, KFRU.
Well, on today's Heritage Show, if you've listened to advertisement or seen advertisement for a certain pharmacy in town over the years, then you're going to know at least the last name of the man we're talking to today, Bob Kilgore, who I met years ago when we used to do production together for Kilgore's Medical Pharmacy. Bob Kilgore, good to have you as a guest. Thanks for being here.
Good to be here, and it was always so wonderful to work with you. It was... You made it so easy.
Well, I can't remember, you know, exactly how the commercials were, but you came in and I think you made quick work of it, so you like to get in and out. Couple of things. When we do the Heritage Show, we basically are talking about somebody's experience as a Boone Countyan, and so we're going to ask you some questions about Kilgore's Medical Pharmacy, and we'll ask you some other questions about what led you to Columbia. I've done enough of my homework to know that I think you're a St. Louis boy originally.
Correct. Yeah, I grew up in St. Louis and went to St. Louis College of Pharmacy there. And then while I was at St. Louis College of Pharmacy, I worked for Walgreens. When you were a student, you had to work somewhere. And then I went to work for them after I got out of school, and it just wasn't what I was looking for. Different environment than I knew I didn't want to spend my entire life working there. So my uncle owned a pharmacy here in Columbia. It was called Bartol's Pharmacy at the time. Mm. And he was losing a pharmacist, so he called me and asked me if I wanted to move to Columbia with my family and work for him. And then, you know, the plan was to eventually take over.
What year was that?
That was 86.
86. Where was that pharmacy? Because I remember the name, but I'm having a hard time placing it right now.
It was over on the Business Loop.
Yeah.
So right next to where Burger King is. I think there's different store there now.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. I remember what that was like. That was a one-of-a-kind pharmacy, though. I mean, that was individually, independently owned pharmacy.
Yeah, it was. And at the time, you know, and still we have Flo's and D&H, and so we're fortunate that we have other pharmacies that are independently owned and are doing well. So.
Yeah. You changed the name then to Kilgore's after you took
it
over?
Yeah, I did. You know, I just felt like I wanted to identify the property with me for whatever reason. It was a big decision at the time. And I agonized over it for forever. But then I finally, you know, made up my mind to do it.
I think a lot of us grew up in towns where we knew the pharmacist and we knew the pharmacy. First of all, I have a question, though, about, like, the Rexall's brand. Is Rexall's a chain? Is that right?
Right, right.
And, but it was always like we knew the pharmacy, and we expected mm-hmm. them to know us. I mean, there's something about a pharmacist that kind of creates a individual relationship with customers, right?
Right, and for the longest time, and I haven't looked lately, we were the most trusted healthcare professionals out there. And I think we do build relationships with customers over time, and I think the most rewarding part for me was to know the people when they came in. They became my friends, and that was why I did it, I think, in the end, is because it made me feel like I was making a difference in those people's lives every day.
What are this on the broader scale? What are the biggest challenges of running a pharmacy?
Well, you know, managed care is obviously a huge issue. Obamacare now. Fortunately, I wasn't around when that all came into existence. But I talked to the people that have since bought Kilgore's, and Bill and Ann and Beth and Laura, and they have huge challenges. It's not like the old days where we filled the prescription and people paid you for that prescription. Almost always there's a third-party provider involved, and they dictate terms and pricing and a variety of things.
So when did you graduate from the pharmacy school in St. Louis?
84.
84. Mm-hmm. So we're talking 32 years ago or so, 30-plus years ago you graduated.
I'm not that old, but yeah.
I know you're not. I can't believe that you've actually been retired from Kilgore's for, 8 or 9 years?
Yeah, it'll be 9 years in September that I've retired. So that was nice. It's been great.
32 years ago doesn't seem that long of a time ago. 1984 doesn't seem that long time mm-hmm. ago. But place us within... So you were saying at that point in time when somebody came to a pharmacy to have a prescription filled, generally they would just they would be paying for it themselves?
That was a transition time. At that point, probably 50% of the people had some type of insurance that paid for it. Or a lot of times back then, people had to pay for things first and then send the receipts in. So that was how insurance was ran in the very beginning. But at that point, honestly, things were transitioning. And that was one of my jobs when I came to work for Tony, is to kind of get us up to speed with the climate at the time.
Yeah. The number of drugs, I don't understand how a pharmacist keeps track of what the drugs are. And it seems to me, you know, this is the illiterate customer question. It seems to me like, why aren't drugs like prepackaged or know what the general prescription is going to ask for in some headquarters someplace, and then they would ship them out, and all you'd have to do is, when somebody came in with a prescription, go to the right shelf in the back, say, okay, here's a month's prescription worth, and that's what the doctors ask you to have. Here it is.
Some of them are that way anymore. You know, if it's a month, it's 30, 60, or 90. You do get packaging that way. But for whatever reasons, they've always sent things to us generally in hundreds or 500s or thousands. And it's a lot less expensive for them to do that. So I'm sure that's why they do.
So how do you keep up on everything? Because I'm thinking there are new drugs that are discovered all the time.
I don't anymore.
But you had to.
I actually retired my license. So I am not a practicing. I chose to do that at the time. I wasn't keeping up, and I felt like I was not. Oh, let's scratch that.
No. But I understand what you're saying. But
I retired my license.
Yeah. But before that, you were still working up until the 2000, you know, late first decade of the 2000s.
Oh, yeah. It's another job in and of itself to keep up with everything that's going on. And at the time, all pharmacists are required to have a certain number of continuing education credits every year. So they're required to have a minimum. But if that's all you did, you wouldn't be able to keep up. You have to study. You know, you would go home at night and look at a journal article, or just if there's a new drug out, you'd try to look at all the side effects and interactions and things like that. But yeah, it's another job.
Yeah. Bob Kilgore is our guest on the Heritage Show. You know, I can also remember, I'll refer back to small town, living in small town growing up. The doctors used to call directly to a pharmacist and tell them exactly what they wanted to be prescribed and things of that nature. Does that still happen much when you were still in the business?
Generally, you didn't talk to physicians at all. They would have a representative that would call a nurse or somebody that would call in the prescriptions. Now everything's faxed or emailed in. In the beginning, I did. I would talk to the doctors on occasion, but for the most part, they usually delegated that responsibility. And in early on, I'm sure that it was the doctor that did it. But
how'd you ever know who was calling in with a prescription was legitimate?
Well, you built a relationship over the phone with almost all the nurses, and it was Georgina or whoever, and you would talk to them many, many times every day. So, but there was fraud then, there's fraud now, and I'm sure people did that back then, and they figured out other ways to do that to the system now, unfortunately.
You know, you mentioned a while ago pharmacies that are independent pharmacies. Mm-hmm. How do they survive? I'm going to guess your answer is they care about their patients, they care about the people that come in and do business with them, and that sets them apart from what would be a Walgreens or a Walmart or any of the other places where they have pharmacies now, or grocery stores now have pharmacies.
Yeah, I think, first of all, they will find niches as well. We do a lot of things at Kilgore's that Walgreens wouldn't think about doing, compounding special formulas. We have an RN on staff that gives shots, surgical support hose. There's a lot of things that we do that they don't do. So that brings them into the store. And then once they get into that store and that environment and see what it's like and see how well they're taken care of and that people genuinely care about them, then they get everything. Then they come back, and because they like that dynamic.
Yeah. You have drive-through windows or had drive-through windows.
We do.
Did you kind of initiate
stores.
That, or was that something that you felt like you'd heard other people doing and needed to do something that way?
There were a variety of pharmacies that had that back then. And so when I built the building out at Chapel Hill to house our pharmacy and other businesses, that was something that I knew that I wanted. And when we built that building, it was kind of tough getting the drive-through, but eventually the city let me have that.
Yeah. When you talk about other services or other businesses out there, especially at the Chapel Hill, let's go back and talk about the locations. So you were talking about the business loop when you came, and who was it? It was your uncle?
Tony. Tony Bartel.
So you took over that one, which would, was on the business loop, probably near Providence in the business loop, right?
Correct.
Sort of where that was. Mm-hmm. How long were you there before you moved?
Well, we kept that store. We opened up a second location out at Chapel Hill. So we left that one there, and then I think it's like right around 2000. We opened, I built that building, and we opened Kilgore South, what we call Kilgore South, and got that up and running. And I remember in the beginning, I worked that store because I wanted to be there to make relationships with these new people. And I worked it by myself because for a while, and there was nobody there. Like, I would sit there for hours on end, and the phone wouldn't ring, and I was like, what have I done? And I brought my dog with me, you know, and it was a challenge. I thought maybe I'd made a mistake, but then people started coming in, and, you know, once again, we built relationships, and that store has done really well for us.
But again, it's kind of a pharmacy has been, I think, traditionally, if somebody likes saying, I'm going to the pharmacy, it's a standalone, it's kind of a destination thing. It's not an accident. I'm going to be walking by and I drop into a pharmacy, if it's a true pharmacy and that's all that you do.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think some people are that way, especially people that need a lot of care. They want to go to a pharmacy. I don't know that they want to go to a grocery store and get their prescription filled. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think it fits the bill for some people. Younger people probably that monthly they get whatever filled, or very rarely they get something filled. That's probably a convenient place for them to get it. But for people that really utilize those kinds of services more, I think that they want to go someplace that is more like what we do.
You eventually changed, though, from the business loop to Providence. You went south on Providence.
Yeah. Place. So when did we do that? Oh, goodness. I don't know. It was probably around, we built the one in 2000, probably between 2003 to 2005, maybe something like that.
What goes into choosing a location like that?
Well, we wanted to be someplace that had good traffic, easy in and out, not move very far from where we were. Mm-hmm. The biggest challenge we had was space at the old store and parking. We had six parking spots,
yeah.
And that was just not acceptable. People complained all the time about the parking, and so finally, we felt like we had grown enough. We needed to move, and we picked that location. That's been a pretty good spot.
I think it is, and the building looks beautiful. I mean, there's certain things that when you're designing a pharmacy, is it different than designing some other kind of store? Do you have to have different kind of strength of bricks or concrete or anything like that?
You need to look at workflow and try to design it as efficiently as you can, like any business, I guess. And, the upstairs, we have our billing offices, and we also have a mail order pharmacy up there, too, that just takes care of transplant and dialysis patients, things like that. So we have a whole nother operation up there that people really don't even know about.
We're going to pause for our announcements and we'll come back. Bob Kilgore is our guest. This is the Heritage Show on KFRU.
This is the KFRU Heritage Series. This is the KFRU Heritage Series.
We're talking the pharmacy with Kilgore's Medical Pharmacy. We'll move beyond that. Bob Kilgore has retired from that, but still it's one of those pharmacy names. You know, Kilgore's makes you feel better or makes Columbia feel better. Right. Were you involved when they came up with that little slogan, that little market motto?
Yeah, I was. It wasn't mine.
Was it somebody from the station that helped with that? Or?
I was just trying to figure it so I could say his name. Oh, he used to do advertising and stuff.
I can vaguely remember who you're talking
about. He does the beer fest. And he's
Tom Bradley.
Yeah.
That's who it was. So he came up with your little phrase there.
See,
that's a catchy one, isn't it?
Yeah, Tom Bradley came up with that. And it was catchy. And I thought that sounds like something that we could live with for a long time. And we changed it a little bit, I think, now. We make Columbia feel better. And then I think
we make you feel better. Because you want to broaden it out, just not be so town specific, especially as people are much more mobile than they used to be.
They are. And we opened a store in Ashland. So,
Do you still have it? You have a store in Ashland?
Yeah. We opened that in 2013, I think. Yeah. 2013. So.
So how do you decide? You have how many owners of Kilgore's now? And are you still a part owner of the group?
Very small part owner. Yeah. We're transitioning me out completely right now, but there are four other owners. And Bill and Ann were the original, Bill Morrissey and Ann Bronstedt. And, you know, if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be sitting here. Uh-huh. Well, maybe I'd still be working. But they're just tremendous people. And I couldn't have left the pharmacy to a better pair. And then as well, we have Beth and Laura that have bought in as well.
So how do you find that right mix? Like, how did you find your first two that are going to, and you could trust them and you knew that they were going to help out and make it more of a success?
You know, I've had a lot of pharmacists work for me, and and they're all great pharmacists, but there's something that sets those types of people apart. They take a vested interest even when it's not theirs. They take complete ownership when it's not theirs. They work extra. They just do things that you know that in the end that somebody you want to be around for a long time.
Did you find them or did they find you?
Well, I found Bill was working part-time for me. He was working at Osco. Remember when Osco had a pharmacy?
Yes.
So he was working at Osco there, and he was working part-time for me, and I really liked him. And then I had a pharmacist that left, and I went right to him and said, "Do you want to come work here?" And fortunately for me, he said yes. And Anne, she worked for me for a little bit and then left to go do something else for a while. And then fortunately, she came back, and, you know, it's been a great thing. I think for them too, but you know, it was great for me to have somebody that if I left the store, I had to go do something, I felt like it was in good hands.
One of the things I think that a company that is independent like a Kilgore's, and we could mention a whole lot of them, I think community involvement is crucial also for that. Where does that stand in your attitude when you were running the business and when you were the main owner of that?
Yeah, I thought that was one of the most important things we could do. You know, when somebody came to us to try to get us involved in whatever it was, I feel like I don't think I could have ever said no to hardly anybody. And, you know, I know they've continued that on, and they've picked things that they really are they serve on boards and are really involved in the community, all of them. And I think that is something that sets us apart from the Walgreens and the, mm-hmm. and whoever else that I just don't see them doing that kind of stuff.
What are some of the highlights that you remember being involved in as you got used to being in Columbia when you moved here from St. Louis? What are some of the highlights of community activities or community involvement
goodness.
That you
You know, we always did the Relay for Life, and that was a lot of fun because we had camped out and we had big tents, and when we did something, we did it completely. And I was involved with Woodhaven, and that was really rewarding, and a variety of things. It's just like, and so many times somebody would come in and say, "Can you sponsor our team, or can you help with this, or can you help with that?" And it wasn't big amounts that we were talking about at the time. Maybe somebody would need $100 for something, or mm-hmm. whatever it was, and that made so much difference to them, and it was such a little thing that we could do, and it's just, in the end, I think those are the kind of things too that it's kind of like karma. You give it out and you get it back many, many fold. So,
were you still involved with the pharmacy when you started the little community garden? Like, was that Nora Stewart Learning Center?
I think I just retired then, actually.
Yeah.
And I remember when we opened that, I went and got a tractor and a tiller and I started tilling that thing up. And I was running into all kinds of old house pieces, and we had to clean up that place forever. And then we got a bunch of dirt shipped in, but Ann really took the lead on that and has been the one that's really taken care of it.
Now, that was right next to is that right next to your store on Providence?
Yeah.
Is that
correct? You know, and we own that, most of that block. There's a little house that we don't own, but, you know, we felt like it's something, a way to give back to the community, you know, and it's been really rewarding.
Some of the other features, in addition to, I mean, too often you think of a pharmacy as just with the drugs and just prescriptions that you're filling, but there's so much more than just drugs. There are, I think, braces, and there are other things that people do. How do you expand to that? Or is that just a given? Do you even learn about that in pharmacy school?
Well, that's kind of on the job training.
Yeah.
You learn a little bit, but not much. And when I came to work for Tony, he had that type of stuff there at the time, walkers and canes and wheelchairs and things like that. So we just, when I took over, I wanted to go more that way, to be more medically oriented, and hence the name. So we did a lot more with the compounding then, which is making special formulas that doctors need that they can't get commercially.
Really? So yeah, you have to tell me more about that, because I've heard of that, but it never clicked my mind, compounding. So how does a doctor communicate, and then how do you, I mean, is it like trial and error? What do you do to compound something?
Well, a doctor might see something in a journal article where there's this particular formulation that has helped this person, but you can't get it commercially, or at least you can't get it in the States. So they'll come to us and say, can you make this for us? And we have been doing it for a long time, and we're involved in different organizations that help us with that. And so you come up with a formula and present it to the doctor, and he tries it on a patient, and it's for some people, it's made all the difference in the world.
I think that would be one of the best parts of the job.
It's really cool. It's, you know, and there, I can't believe that some of these formulas aren't already out there, but there's just a plethora of them. And so we make things every day. We have special rooms, and we're the only pharmacy anywhere around that I know about that has a sterile room, so we can make injectables too. So there might be an injectable or a sterile eye drop for a patient that needs it. So the doctor will see, once again, something that has helped these patients, and can you make this sterile eye drop? No pharmacy in town except for us, or a hospital, can make that. So we're really unique that way.
So if you're doing a compound, how many different ingredients do you remember being like the most? I'm like 2, 3, 4?
Some will have 6 or 8. If it's like a cream, they might put an anti-inflammatory of some kind, a steroid.
So you mix creams together?
Creams and ointments and pills and syrups.
It's like being the mad scientist in the back of the laboratory.
Yeah, we have special technicians that are trained in that, you know, and the pharmacist oversees them. There's a whole room set aside that when you make these, you have to have a special room. You can't just make it right there on the counter.
So. See, that reminds me of, you know, something. This is going into the future, but I think it's kind of closer hearing you talk than I probably would imagine, and that is that we individualized medicine or medication or something like that. I mean, based on the makeup of a person. Someday we'll get to that where compounds are not that, but they are moving towards what's going to work for that individual or for this group of individuals.
Right. Yeah. I medicine is just going to grow leaps and bounds in the next couple decades.
So you don't miss it at all? You don't miss that kind of stuff?
When I was running the pharmacies, I went from 8 employees when I started to about 145 when I left. So it's just, you know, I loved the interaction with my employees and the customers that came in. It just got to be a lot.
Yeah.
And I'm one of these guys that life's too short, and I really wanted to just go out and enjoy life. And, you know, fortunately I was able to do that.
On the, in our last segment, I'll ask you more about what keeps you busy and what you're enjoying doing now, but we'll end up this segment with just some more conversation about pharmacy work and things mm-hmm. of that nature. Cause you, if I remember, do you have like, did anything change from like your early work right out of the pharmacy school in St. Louis, and you looked back on that after whatever many years, 30 or whatever years in the business, and you look back and say, I never would have imagined that we were doing lactation or this or that or anything like that that became big over that time period.
You know, when I was in pharmacy school, I was fortunate enough to intern at a pharmacy that was very in the forefront. So I saw a lot of that already, and I saw that pharmacy wasn't just pharmacy anymore. It wasn't just counting pills. There was so much more that we could do as healthcare professionals, and I felt like that's why I went towards a medical thrust mm-hmm. when I opened the store, and I just didn't want to be the pharmacist that counted pills all the day. I wanted to find needs and fill them. And we do a lot with impotence. There's an injection that men get for that, and we're the only ones that make that. And I remember you know, reading about it in a journal article, and I went and talked to Dr. Monty at the time, and we looked at it, and we thought, yeah, this is something that's a viable treatment for patients, and we started doing that. And, you know, it's just so many things out there that you can't get at a Walgreens or a grocery store pharmacy. So
when you say you make that, would one of the reasons you make that is because it has to be a certain, I don't know if freshness is the right word or not, but you know, it was fairly new or fresh or what?
It's a mixture of different medications, yeah. And it's not commercially available for whatever reason. And so we were able to make it ourselves, and it works wonderfully for a lot of gentlemen. You wouldn't believe how many people get that stuff.
How do the doctors know whether to prescribe it or not? I mean, is that something that they know you do, and so the word spreads, and then they can do it?
Yeah, that's how it started initially. And I went to Dr. Monty at the time and said, what do you think? Do you want to try this? And he said, yeah, you know, like he had heard about it. And so he definitely wanted to try it. And he started working with him, and he would send his patients, and there's pumps and other things involved with that as well. And we would help them with whatever it is. And Dr. Monty would prescribe these things. And
do pharmacists live under a certain code? I mean, you have a code of privacy, I would suppose.
Oh, yeah. There's everything we say or do with any patient is confidential. I would never talk to anybody in any setting about it.
Yeah, but I mean, it just has to be part of it because you know the life of a lot of people.
Yeah, just like, you know, a doctor or anybody else, it's important to whatever.
Were you still working when they changed? Wasn't it something that changed where when I went to fill a prescription, if I were going to fill a prescription, then you had to provide more information or be ready to answer questions? I mean, it seems like that would always be a part of going to get a prescription filled. But it seems in my mind sometime recently, and it might have been even, I thought it would have been long enough that maybe you were still doing that, but there was a change in the focus where pharmacists had to be ready to answer questions.
I was at the time, and you would have the people that have to actually sign off that they were counseled
exactly.
Or whatever. And for us, it was commonplace anyway. It wasn't like it was, we're going to give you a prescription and not tell you about it. So now, yeah, they have to sign. You have to sign multiple times when you pick up a prescription. And I guess somebody came up with, you know, more laws and regulations for us to follow.
So of the 140, you said 140, 145 employees, mm-hmm. when you left, how many of those were in the business of meeting insurance needs and rules and regulations as opposed to what you would call pharmacists that were filling prescriptions and doing and helping people get the right brace or get the right walker?
Probably about 20 or so people that were just in 20, 30, just in billing and then we had a lot of technicians, and now we have a lot of pharmacists as well. Even then, we had quite a few. I don't even know how many. We have maybe 10 pharmacists now or more. So, and I'm sure Bill Ann will be like, dude, we have 13. I don't know.
Yeah, but you're speaking, and again, Bob Kilgore, who is our guest, is not at Kilgore's Medical Pharmacy anymore. He's not there. He's mm-hmm. not working. He hasn't done it for several years. So these are all things that we're just picking your brain about your experience. But I'm curious, do people... I'm thinking there's a pharmacy school at UMKC, is that mm-hmm. right? And
yeah.
There's one that you went to in St. Louis.
Right, and they actually have a pharmacy school here now, too. That's it's a offshoot of the UMKC pharmacy school.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, and we provide a scholarship every year for one of the kids there, and they do internships at our pharmacy, which is just, they couldn't have a better place to do one at. They just learn so much there.
Was the College of Pharmacy at St. Louis, were they the eutechnics or something like
that?
Yeah,
eutechnics. That was the one. Eutechnic is when you take two solids, mix them together, it makes a liquid, menthol.
So I didn't know, I never knew what they, you know, it's just like, it's one of like the best mascot names.
Eutechnics, yeah, that's what we were. And but it was all intramural. We weren't, you know. We didn't
well, I mean, every once in a while they're playing
else.
Like a Columbia College or a Stevens College or
anymore,
something.
That's
like
probably
that.
Possible. At the time, we didn't have that. We just, when I went to school, you just played amongst each other.
So where was that pharmacy located in St. Louis? I don't have any idea.
It's down by Wash U.
Oh.
So down by Euclid, down by Euclid and Forest Park.
So did you go straight into that out of high school? I don't know. Or do you go to an undergraduate?
Time, yeah, it was a 5-year program at the time. Now it's 6 years. But yeah, we go right out of high school and you're thrown in the fire.
So did they give basic classes like English and math and things like that? Or is it
very little. You would have a speech class, an English class, and then math, chemistry, and he had some history stuff too. But they went right into the,
how hard
he had chemistry class every year.
Oh, I bet
5 years. So.
You needed to more than one in my book. You probably
And then you had pharmacology and other stuff as well. So
now how hard is the test to pass to become a pharmacist, licensed pharmacist?
It was challenging. I passed the first time, and so they just tell you if you pass or fail. They don't tell you how you did or what you did. So, but it was challenging. It was a 2-day test. And then you had a practical where you had to actually make something when I did it. So you had to do a little lab work too. So it was challenging. A lot of calculations, no calculators allowed. Everything's longhand. So all your calculations had to, two pencils, no slide rule, no nothing. So, and that's where our calculations class was. We had this little colonel that was Dr. Haberle, and he was stickler. And I was doing fine in the class, and then I messed up one of my scorecards, and I did have everything right on my sheet, but I put it down on my scorecard wrong. So I took it to him and I showed it to him. I said, "Oh, I made a mistake." He's like, "You do that on the boards, you're not going to be a pharmacist." And so I had to drop the class.
Wow.
Take it all over, but it was fine. Calculations were very important. So
well, sure.
I got to do it twice.
I mean, you got somebody's life in your hand. I mean, yeah. Not to exaggerate much, but it is like having somebody's life in your hand. If you make a bad prescription fill, then...
Yeah, you had to have a B average to graduate from that, just to pass that class. You couldn't have a C or D or anything like that. So,
how big were the classes back then?
We started with 100 and some odd, 120 maybe or so in my class. And, they did that thing, look to each side, and one of them won't be here. And, so it shrinks over time.
Do you think young people are moving? I mean, is the pool of those who want to be pharmacists still deep?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a great profession for anybody. And it's one that, people can work part-time still. So if you want to have a family and kids, you could work some and still be around for your children. You don't mm-hmm. have to work full-time. Most do.
Yeah.
But I think, if some families where you have two people working.
Yeah. We'll take a break. We'll come back one more segment, and it's the shortest segment that we have. Bob Kilgore is our guest. You're listening to The Heritage Show. This is KFRU.
This is the KFRU Heritage Series. More coming up on News Talk 1400, KFRU. This is the KFRU Heritage Series.
We're enjoying our visit today on The Heritage Show with Bob Kilgore. You'll know that name from Kilgore's Medical Pharmacy. He's retired from that coming up on 9 years, I believe, this September, correct?
Yep.
I remember what you said earlier in this program. So what do you do with yourself now? I mean, you were retired from pharmacy, from the medical pharmacy, pretty young.
Yeah, I did. I ride around on tractors, I hunt and fish and travel. But, one thing that was kind of funny is, like, when I retired, I thought that, I had so much to do. I had farms and different things. But for a little while there, I was kind of in a funk and I couldn't figure it out. And finally I realized that Kilgore's was such a big part of my identity. It fed me, mm-hmm. And it fed my ego. It fed me in a lot of variety of ways that I didn't comprehend. So when I quit initially, I got a little, not depressed, but I didn't know what to do with myself. Yeah. And so once I figured that out and figured that I had left it to good people and they're doing a great job, and I came to terms with it in my own mind, I was fine.
But I bet you still run into people, though, maybe not every day, but regularly, who still think you're at the pharmacy.
Yeah, they do. Or they think that Bill's last name is Kilgore or whatever. they do. And, that's one of the most fun things is you'll be someplace and somebody will come up and say, "Oh, you should take good care of my mom." Or, "I got something there the other day." And the people were so nice. And fortunately for me, when I ran the store, and even now, I don't get calls that say, da-da-da-da-da. I get good stuff.
Yeah.
So that means we're doing the right thing.
Yeah. And I was just thinking, earlier in our interview, I was thinking about how you could follow somebody through certain stages of life. And even, I know my wife is a nurse, and so I know what happens when she knows that somebody has passed away who she's helped with certain things that she has done. So pharmacists go through the same thing because, you can just trace that those life passages.
Oh yeah, you can, and you just get to be such good friends with some of these people, and it's difficult, it's hard, but you know, I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah. So why'd you stay in Colombia? Why'd you decide this is the place you're going to stick around?
Well, it's a great town. I love Colombia. We have so much going on with the festivals and you know, places like the Blue Note and just great restaurants and hopefully a better airport for travel. And, you know, people are so nice, and I do like to hunt and fish, and it's not far away.
What part of the county where do you hang out?
Northern Boone, yeah. And then I spend a lot of time in Sheridan County as well. That's where my duck club thing is.
So I know where Sheridan County is.
Yeah.
I'm a Macon County boy in Sheridan County.
Well,
I'm
you know where Brookfield is.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
So we have our cabins just south of Brookfield.
Yeah, it's a good hunting area up there.
Oh, yeah,
because you're getting close to Swan Lake and all those areas.
Swan and Pershing Grove.
All of those things are good.
You know Pershing Park and all that, so that's funny.
Yeah, I mean, it's just that was just part of upbringing. When you used to come in to do production, it seemed to me you always got into conversations, especially when Simon was around, about soccer. Did you play? You played soccer.
Yeah, it was a huge part of my life for a long, long time, and I played, you know, as a child, and played my whole life. And then when I came to Columbia, I was going to have to give that up because I was playing in a men's league in St. Louis. And then I, you know, the soccer community here is huge. And the beautiful thing, and then the best thing about it is that with having the University of Missouri, I got to meet people from Turkey and Spain, and Costa Rica, and all these different places. And I actually ended up going and visiting people in some of these places.
Really?
Yeah, I became friends with them.
They would pass through like as foreign students,
right,
or something like that?
Right. So, and then a lot of them would end up, you know, staying for a long, long mm-hmm. time. And I went to Tunisia that way. And so, like, I met just such a great group of friends through soccer and played for a long, long time. I quit playing about 5 years ago. My knees were it was so hard on it.
Yeah.
And I played indoor a lot, that was really hard on it and hard on my knees. And so I started biking and doing some other stuff. So.
A lot of people wouldn't know that there was such an adult group of soccer players. I mean, Simon keeps it alive through his conversations all the time. But I mean, a lot of them think you graduate out of that after high school if you don't go on and play in college. But adult leagues are fun in sports.
They are. And there's just such a great camaraderie. You know everybody in the leagues and you play together. And it's competitive on the field. But afterwards, you have a couple beers and you say, hey, and you see people and they just become your friends for a long, long time.
So is that still out there now?
I mean, yeah, the guys play all the time.
And where do they play?
Well, they used to play down at Reactor Field.
Oh, yeah.
And then Mayor Lazar had a field out there we played at all the time in his backyard, basically. And he had irrigated. It was nice.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and so there's pickup games. And then there's leagues, indoor leagues, and then an outdoor league, too. So
what's it like when you travel to Tunisia or any of these other countries that you talked about?
Well, it's so cool when you travel with somebody that's from there.
Yeah.
Anytime you go anywhere and you either travel with somebody that's been there a bunch or that's from there, that's makes it so much more better.
Did you play soccer over there? I mean, you had to play soccer if you
We played on the beach, yeah, with those guys. Yeah, there was a bunch of guys that would play on the beach, and I played with them there. And they were surprised that, you know, an American dude could actually play soccer. So anyway, that was always fun to see the looks on their faces.
So anything else that strikes you about this community? I mean, I thought what you said earlier just a few moments ago about an identity being kind of absorbed by a business or something like that and people identifying you so much. And then it would be a withdrawal to have to leave that all of a sudden. But, I mean, you know, you've weathered that well. You're past that now. It has no effect on you at that time. But, I mean, I thought that's a good insight.
Yeah, and I think that's what happens to a lot of people that and I'm not even on this level at all, but I think you look at some of those sports people that retire and then they don't retire and they retire. They don't know anything else. And I didn't know anything else at the time. I had hobbies and things, but the pharmacy was really my identity. And I gave it up, but now it's all good. I'm so happy.
You said you weren't a numbers person. Did you ever think about how much time you spent there during a week?
Well, in the beginning, I spent 7 days a week working on it because I was the only pharmacist. So, and then I had to pay the bills on Sundays and do all the payroll and everything. So, in the beginning it was more than full time, obviously. And then fortunately, as I got more pharmacists that came to work, I didn't have to work all the time, especially I didn't have to work the counter all the time. I was able to do more managerial things and work on the business and try to grow the business, which is fun.
Before we're done, favorite places to go on vacation if you're going to be hunting or outdoor activity, where do you like to go most?
Wyoming for hunting, probably.
What do you hunt?
Elk. I love the elk hunt. And I absolutely love waterfowl hunting. So, but that's here in Missouri, and that's not a vacation.
You have
that's,
dogs?
That's, yeah, I have a German short hair. His name's Mo. He's wonderful. He's a great little guy. So.
If you're not hunting, where do you vacation?
We travel. My wife and I like to scuba dive. So last year we went to this last, not too long ago, we were in the Philippines. Palau, Yap.
Why the Philippines to scuba?
Great diving. You know, over there, it's just spectacular. Unspoiled reefs, just, you know, unfortunately, there's just not a lot of great places to dive in the U.S. And so you can go to the Caribbean and stuff, but a lot of those places are just dove out and, you know, the reefs aren't in great shape. But some of these places, we went on a liveaboard boat, so it took 16-hour boat ride to get to where we were going to dive. And it's a World Heritage Site out in the middle of nowhere, and it's beyond description. Down there? People that haven't done that, it's just, it really is beautiful. Like, so much prettier than up here.
People welcome you there?
Oh, yeah. They're just lovely people, you know, and...
You've traveled 16 hours by a boat to get here. You guys must be crazy.
Yeah, after 30-some-odd hours of travel, you know? Yeah. But, you know, people in other countries, whether it's Costa Rica, which I used to go to a lot, or wherever, they have what's in their pockets, but they are all so happy. Mm-hmm. And I just don't understand it. We over here have everything we could possibly imagine, and some people just can't be happy. And so to go over there and see these people smiling all the time, laughing all the time, and may not even have much of a place to live, but it's just that's one of the things that stays with me all the time.
That is a good place to end because that's a good lesson for us. I really appreciate you taking the time to visit with us. Thanks.
My pleasure.
Bob Kilgore has been our guest. That's the Heritage Show this week on KFRU.
You've been listening to the KFRU Heritage Series, celebrating our history and heritage of Columbia and Boone County. Listen each Sunday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. The KFRU Heritage Series from News Talk 1400, KFRU. Columbia.